Chapter 124. Apart from that, which, as you hint, gives me a reason to be thankful, that I alone, happily for all the rest, possess, surely there is no one in the house who would not say, and feel at least as much. You do not think that anybody here would be indifferent to a mischance, or misfortune happening to the head of the house, or anything than truly sorry for it. ... You have good reason to be bound to him too. ... said the manager, contemptuously. Why, don't you believe that you are kept here as a cheap example and a famous instance of the clemency of Dombey and Son, redounding to the credit of the illustrious house? ... replied his brother, mildly, I have long believed that I am kept here for more kind and disinterested reasons. But you were going, said the manager, with the snarl of a tiger cat, to recite some Christian precept, I observed. ... returned the other, though the tie of brotherhood between us has been long broken and thrown away. ... Who broke it, good sir? ... said the manager. I, by my misconduct. I do not charge it upon you. ... The manager replied, with that mute action of his bristling mouth, oh, you don't charge it upon me. ... and bade him go on. I say, though there is not that tie between us, do not, I entreat, assail me with unnecessary taunts, or misinterpret what I say, or would say. I was only going to suggest to you that it would be a mistake to suppose that it is only you who have been selected here, above all others, for advancement, confidence, and distinction. Selected, in the beginning, I know, for your great ability and trustfulness, and to communicate more freely with Mr. Dombey than anyone, and stand, it may be said, on equal terms with him, and have been favored and enriched by him, that it would be a mistake to suppose that it is only you who are tender of his welfare and reputation. There is no one in the house, from yourself down to the lowest, I sincerely believe, who does not participate in that feeling. ... You lie. ... said the manager, red with sudden anger. You're a hypocrite, John Carker, and you lie. ... James. ... cried the other, flushing in his turn. What do you mean by these insulting words? Why do you so basely use them to me, unprovoked? ... I tell you, said the manager, that your hypocrisy and meekness, that all the hypocrisy and meekness of this place is not worth that to me, snapping his thumb and finger, and that I see through it, as if it were air. There is not a man employed here, standing between myself and the lowest in place, of whom you are very considerate, and with reason, for he is not far off, who wouldn't be glad at heart to see his master humbled, who does not hate him secretly, who does not wish him evil rather than good, and who would not turn upon him if he had the power and boldness. The nearer to his favor, the nearer to his insolence, the closer to him, the farther from him. That's the creed here. ... I don't know, said his brother, whose roused feelings had soon yielded to surprise, who may have abused your ear with such representations, or why you have chosen to try me, rather than another. But that you have been trying me, and tampering with me, I am now sure. You have a different manner and a different aspect from any that I ever saw in you. I will only say to you, once more, you are deceived. ... I know I am, said the manager. I have told you so. ... Not by me, returned his brother. By your informant, if you have one. If not, by your own thoughts and suspicions. ... I have no suspicions, said the manager. Mine are certainties. You pusillanimous, abject, cringing dogs. All making the same show, all canting the same story, all whining the same professions, all harboring the same transparent secret. ... His brother withdrew, without saying more, and shut the door as he concluded. Mr. Carker, the manager, drew a chair close before the fire and fell to beating the coals softly with the poker. The faint-hearted, fawning knaves, apostrophe he muttered, with his two shining rows of teeth laid bare. There's not one among them who wouldn't feign to be so shocked and outraged. Bah! There's not one among them, but if he had at once the power and the wit and daring to use it, would scatter Dombey's pride and lay it low as ruthlessly as I rake out these ashes. Apostrophe, as he broke them up and strewed them in the grate, he looked on with a thoughtful smile at what he was doing, without the same queen beckon or two. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he added presently, and there is pride there, not to be forgotten, witness our own acquaintance. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with that he fell into a deeper reverie, and sat pondering over the blackening grate, until he rose up like a man who had been absorbed in a book, and looking round him took his hat and gloves, went to where his horse was waiting, mounted, and rode away through the lighted streets, for it was evening. He rode near Mr. Dombey's house, and falling into a walk as he approached it, looked up at the window, where he had once seen Florence sitting with her dog, attracted his attention first, though there was no light in it, but he smiled as he carried his eyes up the tall front of the house, and seemed to leave that object superciliously behind. Time was, apostrophe he said, when it was well to watch even your rising little star, and know in what quarter there were clouds, to shadow you if needful. But a planet has arisen, and you are lost in its light. Apostrophe, he turned the white-legged horse round the street corner, and sought one shining window from among those at the back of the house. Associated with it was a certain stately presence, a gloved hand, the remembrance how the feathers of a beautiful bird's wing had been showered down upon the floor, and how the light white down upon a robe had stirred and rustled, as in the rising of a distant storm. These were the things he carried with him as he turned away again, and rode through the darkening and deserted parks at a quick rate. In fatal truth, these were associated with a woman, a proud woman, who hated him, but who by slow and sure degrees had been led on by his craft, and her pride and resentment, to endure his company, and little by little to receive him as one who had the privilege to talk to her of her own defiant disregard of her own husband, and her abandonment of high consideration for herself. They were associated with a woman who hated him deeply, and who knew him, and who mistrusted him, because she knew him, and because he knew her, but who fed her fierce resentment by suffering him to draw nearer, and yet nearer to her every day, in spite of the hate she cherished for him. In spite of it. For that very reason, since in its depths, too far down for her threatening eye to pierce, though she could see into them dimly, lay the dark retaliation, whose faintest shadow seen once and shuddered at, and never seen again, would have been sufficient stain upon her soul. Did the phantom of such a woman flit about him on his ride, true to the reality, and obvious to him? Yes. He saw her in his mind, exactly as she was. She bore him company with her pride, resentment, hatred, all as plain to him as her beauty, with nothing plainer to him than her hatred of him. He saw her sometimes haughty and repellent at his side, and sometimes down among his horse's feet, fallen and in the dust. But he always saw her as she was, without disguise, and watched her on the dangerous way that she was going. And when his ride was over, and he was newly dressed, and came into the light of her bright room with his bent head, soft voice, and soothing smile, he saw her yet as plainly. He even suspected the mystery of the gloved hand, and held it all the longer in his own for that suspicion. Upon the dangerous way that she was going, he was still, and not a footprint did she mark upon it, but he set his own there, straight. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.